How do you feel about doing absolutely nothing? Does even the thought of that make you feel a little uneasy, overwhelmed by that constant nagging feeling that you should be doing something? There was a time when we could do nothing and not feel we had to reach for our phone. Do we let ourselves be bored anymore? Have we always experienced boredom in the same way? Here's the next in our How Did That Become a Thing series on the little histories we take for granted with Susan Mousehart. Take it away, Louie.
My story is much too sad to be told, but practically everything leaves me totally cold. Yes.
Boredom, like beauty or conjunctivitis, is in the eye of the beholder. What for one person is like watching paint dry is for another, well, not what you'd expect.
It's a much bigger world than you think out there when it comes to paint. So,
take Kristen Garland. Kristen's a colour consultant and she owns a custom paint store in Fremantle. I spoke to her while she was on a job the other day.
I'll go and stand in the shade. That's the plastic sheeting.
She had just finished applying an iron ore-based paint and was sitting there waiting for it to, well...
And is it true that part of your job is to watch paint dry?
Well, you have to. Yes.
I get a kick out of you.
When you delve into this side of paint, it's fascinating. You've only got a certain window of time, I suppose, where you apply separate coats.
So are you saying that it can actually be kind of suspenseful?
Very. Sometimes you take your heart in your hand.
Obviously, boredom can be hard to pin down. Boredom is really an umbrella term for a whole variety of emotional states, ranging all the way from disgust to mild euphoria.
Yes,
but here's something you may never have thought about. Boredom wasn't always a thing. There was a time when it didn't exist. I sounded really excited when I just said that. That's probably because I was exaggerating. I always get excited when I exaggerate.
Next Thursday on Louie.
About you, but I'm old enough to remember a time when toddlers didn't need iPads to keep them occupied in the car, when their mums and dads could withstand the tedium of a red light without batting an eye, let alone an iPhone. Do you remember when people went on holiday in order to do nothing and liked it?
Yeah, baby.
In 1959, an article in the Harvard Business Review lamented that boredom, which used to bother only aristocrats, has become a common curse. 1959. Really? But it's not just boredom that's had its historical highs and lows. It's all emotions.
Emotions do have a history. There are emotions that we find early on in European history that don't exist now.
That was Dr. Juanita Ferris-Rise, a researcher with the ARC Center for the History of Emotions. Juanita explained to me that the culture we live in really does shape how we feel. It's a bit like a prism. Change the angle, and things take on a totally different color.
What happens is some societies enable certain sorts of emotions to come to the fore, others don't.
Dr. Peter Tuohy, whom you just heard speaking to me from his home in Canada, is probably the world's foremost historian of boredom. Yep, there are others. Peter pointed out to me that, sure, people have always experienced lack of stimulation, but how they responded to that, whether they ever perceived it as a problem, well, that's where we see big shifts over time. We'll hear more from Peter in a bit, but first, who were boredom's founding fathers? I put the question to Juanita. And, well, blame it on memories of interminable pre-Vatican II Latin masses, but I wasn't really that surprised to learn the answer.
It was something that was very specific to medieval monks out in the desert. So they were living quite a deprived ascetic life. This particular emotional state was known as the noonday devil.
The technical term for this holiness fatigue was acedia, and it was a serious business if you were a monk. It ranked right up there with lust and gluttony as one of the seven deadly sins. Which is weird, because that makes it sound as if boredom were some sort of, I don't know, guilty pleasure. As if there were people who actually enjoyed being bored.
I am James Ward, and I like boring things. I like boring things so much that I, as Julian said, I am the founder of the Boring Conference. It's a day sort of dedicated to the mundane, the ordinary, the obvious, and the overlooked.
Who else but an Englishman could make a career out of boredom? Although, to be fair, Ward's tagline and the title of his popular blog, I Like Boring Things, is evidently a quote from Andy Warhol, of all people. But whatever. Ward's thrill-packed posts examine topics like peas and stationery and building plastic models. And he holds a boring conference in London each year.
I'm bored. I'm the chairman of the board.
As for boredom, we didn't even have a word for it until 1852. Its first appearance in print, some say appropriately, was in Dickens' super long serial Bleak House. But most historians agree that boredom burst onto the scene a full century earlier, during the period we call the Enlightenment. But then, what didn't burst onto the scene during the Enlightenment?
Everything was invented then. Leisure, boredom, jealousy, the modern concept of time, and so on and so on.
That's Dr. Peter Tuohy again, a professor of history at the University of Calgary. His book, Boredom, A Lively History, was published by Yale University Press in 2011. Well, Peter divides boredom into two categories. Hang on, is that boring?
To start with, there's this, the simple form, which I've defined as it's an emotion of mild disgust produced by temporarily unavoidable and predictable circumstances.
I'm bored. I'm so bored.
The boredom of the child or the animal is a simple boredom.
Now, this kind of boredom probably arose as a protective mechanism to keep human beings on the alert and moving forward.
Bored.
Complex boredom, which is the variety that arose alongside the Industrial Revolution, is sometimes also described as existential boredom.
It's usually defined like this. It's a powerful and unrelieved sense of emptiness and isolation in which an individual feels a persistent lack of interest in and connection to his circumstances.
This modern form of boredom was associated almost exclusively with the leisured class.
Look at all the captivating, fascinating things there are to do.
Name two.
Because if there's one absolutely essential precondition to boredom, it's spare time. People toiling in a subsistence economy, you know, peasants, serfs, single parents, they don't have the luxury of feeling bored.
You can hear every tree almost saying, look at me.
What color are the trees?
Green.
What color were they last year?
Green.
And next year?
Green.
It's a bore.
Don't you? Technology has been another key factor in the equal distribution of boredom. The mechanical clock, for example, developed in the 13th century, which made time visible, measurable, and capable of weighing heavily on our hands. The printing press in the 15th century, because literacy encouraged introspection, my mother called it moping, as well as the idea that the mind, left unattended, was an empty vessel or a blank slate needing to be filled up. The electric light bulb, which handed humanity a huge second helping of time, literally overnight. And the internet, of course, which is ratcheting up our appetite for quote-unquote stimulation to previously unimaginable and arguably pathological new levels. Juanita Ferris Rise sees boredom as the price of freedom, of having lives that are self-determining, rather than dictated by church or ironclad custom. Other research suggests that there's a problem no matter which end of the option spectrum you're at, you know, whether you have too few or too many. Like the problem of having 70 toys in your closet, evidently the average number for an American child. Joshua Becker of the blog Being Minimalist mulled that one over on HuffPost Live recently.
I don't remember being nearly as bored as my son is with all the things that he has, right? Like you knew your discontent wasn't going to be solved by buying another toy or getting another video game, but you had this set of toys and you're going to have to make it work one way or the other.
But here's something else that's exciting about boredom. All of a sudden, it's also become a thing to study. All kinds of people are researching boredom these days, not just historians, psychologists, neuroscientists. As a result, we're learning some pretty startling facts about the dangers of boredom.
Boredom not only can kill you in the form of suicide, boredom is a key indicator of depression. It has a disastrous impact on all aspects of life.
See, that proves my point. That was from a recent documentary titled Hello, Boredom. But we're also hearing, and this may surprise you, about boredom's brighter side, if you will, about its role in stimulating creativity and innovation. German researcher Thomas Goetz, for example, has identified 5 types of boredom. And I'm not going to go into that because it's kind of boring, but one of those types, he calls it the calibrating variety, is a really good kind of boredom. It's characterized by wandering thoughts and general openness. It's been said that the cure for boredom is curiosity, and that there's no cure for curiosity. I wish I'd said that. It was Dorothy Parker. But others see boredom as a necessary precondition for curiosity. I mean, if you're never bored, you never have a space to be curious.
Neuroscience is finding that when we are idle, when we are bored, when we are not distracted or focused on something else, our brains are actually most active.
Okay, that was one of the least boring people you'll ever meet. She's Bridget Schulte, a reporter for The Washington Post and author of a book that exploded like a ticking time bomb earlier this year. It's called Overwhelmed: Love, Work, and Play When No One Has the Time. It's about the cult of busyness, that whole I have no time to live my life epidemic that seems to afflict all of us in the age of email. I rang up Bridget pretty much out of the blue. I do stuff like that when I'm bored, because I was curious to know if she saw our love affair with being busy as a kind of antidote to our fear of boredom.
You know, I would say they're almost more the same thing. Both of them take you out of being fully present in yourself and fully present in the moment.
Listening to her, it occurred to me, hey, when did busyness become a thing? Okay, I'm working on it. Sheesh, never a dull moment around here.
She said we were never feeling bored, 'cause we were never being boring. We had too much time to find for ourselves, and we were never being boring. We dressed up in thoughts, and thoughts make amends, and we were never holding back, worried that time would come to an end. When I went, I left from the station with a haversack and some trepidation.
Oh, yes. Any excuse to play the Pet Shop Boys on morning radio, Susan Mousehart and her very unboring little history of boredom. Oh, I'm quite puffed. Been dancing in the studio. The next instalment in our How Did That Become a Thing series of Susan's. More to come, of course, and there is a cracker feature from Susan on our homepage, abc.net.au/rn. It is a classic. Let me just read you one line from it. Boredom like beauty, or conjunctivitis, is clearly in the eye of the beholder.